Hi. I first thought I was speaking on 6 and 7, and I could have understood that because I'm a very flawed human being, and I could see where you would think 6 and 7 would be something I would be, like, good at, knowing about how to be, like, humiliated and still stay clean and get through it, that kind of stuff. And then when they told me I was going to be the spiritual speaker, I honestly laughed because I thought about what do I view as a spiritual speaker, and I don't know what that is, but I knew I wasn't that. Whatever that is, that wasn't me. But when I started to think about it, my relationship with a spiritual being has improved since I've been in recovery. I have a God. I choose to call God because that's what I choose to call God. And it's improved as it should because the steps indicate by the pronoun usage that it should. You know, higher power, God, than just him, and him being not gender specific, just that that's the way the English language rolls. You know. And it has improved. I can remember consciously when that relationship was severed by me when I was 12. I can remember very clear. There was a death, and being 12 and being, you know, a kid, I just thought that God took someone away from me who was the only person that made me feel good about being me. And I wanted nothing more to do with God. And it, coincidentally, or not so, my addiction went into full throttle. It had always been there. I had always used since I was a kid because I grew up in an alcoholic family. I mean, my addiction, my levels of addiction run deep. There isn't a place in the family structure that I haven't been in that has the addict, you know, associated. I've been the spouse, I've been the addict, I've been the child, I've been the mother, I've been, you know, whatever it is, I've been. And so I'm acutely aware that addiction is more than just drug use. I'm one of those addicts. I'm greedy. I'm a greedy addict. I don't know if you are, but I remember I had a sponsor who used to talk about recovery was like a red, juicy apple. And some people are hungry, and they look at that apple, and they just go, oh, well, I'm hungry, but I'm not up for an apple. And they walk away. And some people are hungry, and they nibble at the apple, and that's okay. That's where they want to be, that's okay. And other people devour the apple. I'm one of the ones that devour the apple. I'm not someone who just feels like because I'm not going to the psych wards anymore that that's good enough. And it's okay if other people do, don't get me wrong, but it's not okay for me. And I think that's what recovery's about, what's okay for me. I have people, or I've had people that really can't stand me as a sponsor because I refuse to answer the questions that are their questions. They're not my questions. I'm not going to answer them. My questions pertain to the steps. My questions pertain to traditions. They pertain to anything else. Anything else, really, even like your belief in a God, your belief in this or that, that's yours. That's your journey, your process, your pathway. I came in and I was very intellectual. I approach everything intellectually. I was talking to Jim on the way up, and I said my sponsor, when I had a couple years clean, she's deceased now. She handed me this tape and said, "You'll really love this guy because he's cynical, he's too intellectual, and he has troubles with God. You'll relate immediately." And I did. I really did, because he always was thinking everything way past when you should stop the question. I mean, there's a line in some movie or something that says that the quickest way to destroy a miracle is to continue to question it. I'm one of those people. I think it's because I did acid. I really do. Because I'm just like a why. I just like will think it to death. And I've had to learn to stop thinking things to death. I think things to death like in this sense. I wasn't, when I first entered recovery, my sponsor wouldn't let me read the literature that we had because I would not, you know, people read literature and they get comforted from it, and normal people. I'm not a normal person. And I would read the literature and I would go home and beat myself up with what I read. You know, it would say, you know, if you have fear, you know, fear is a lack of faith. And I would start to go, well, sometimes fear is having common sense. If you don't have any fear, you're a sociopath. I mean, I would just go on and on and on. I just couldn't, like, take it and just, like, be okay. So I had to learn to do some things with all of that. I have certain beliefs that I carry, and I don't know if they're right or wrong. My life would not be, to me, constituted as a normal life. I have three children. I was married once. That was before I entered recovery. I don't foresee being married twice because I was married once. And that's really where I'm at. Now, that may change because heaven knows there are many things I never thought I would do here that I have done. But at this stage of the game, I'm okay. I have three beautiful children, two older children who are not really children, but they're children to me. One's 27 and one's 24. One's been in the Air Force for 6 years, so he's not really a child. He like knows how to kill people with a fork and stuff, but he's my kid. And then I have an 11-year-old daughter, and then I have a granddaughter who's going to be 7 in December. I have been able to raise those children, except for my eldest when I came in, she was a year and a half old. Those children have been raised in the rooms of NA. They have sat in on many meetings for many times. My son is a member. My eldest daughter is not a member. My eldest daughter needs to be a member in my eyes. Because I love her and I fear for her. My son is in the military, so I fear for him and I love him, but it's in a different way. He's doing something that he desires to do. And I guess really she's doing something she desires to do too. It was very hard for me as a parent to allow my children, my elder children, once they turned 18, to be their own people, whatever that was. I was not for my son being in the military. I am, although I was born in 60, I'm a child of or a product or a byproduct of the 60s. I don't have a lot of trust in government still. I'm just not very good at that. And so for my son, I mean, he's funny. He said to me, "Mom, you raised me to be liberal and open-minded and look at all the viewpoints," and so I joined the military just to squash all of that. I said, "Thanks." So, that's it. My house used to be, when they were growing up, I worked for the diocese at one point, so we had people coming from Germany and they would stay with us, and we had friars from South America that were that would come up and stay at our house. And so they grew up in this like little UN home, and he makes jokes about it now, how it's not normal for most, he said there's people that on his base that they're not used to meeting people that have sustained gunshot wounds as if it's an everyday event and stuff like that. So I guess that's probably true, but that's how they were raised. And I tried to raise them to respect all people. Because I think it's important. I really do. Not that I live up to that all the time, but I really try to respect all people, differences and similarities. And that's really because I try to respect myself. And if I try to respect me, I must respect you. It just goes hand in hand. My faith had been tested in the sense of, I stayed clean. That was a miracle for me. I was able to raise two children. That was a miracle for me. I mean, I own my own home. That's a miracle for me. All those things that theoretically on paper should have never happened and should never have been. Those were all gifts of God. About a little while ago, I guess about almost 6 years ago, I had the ability, I had been told when I entered recovery by people who have been here before me that when you get about 17 years, 20 years, you see things differently. And they would make jokes for me. They would always say, but in your case, Mayor, maybe 25, maybe 27, you know, because like you're a little beyond the pale. That started to happen. I have a different viewpoint on things than I did when I was younger, or younger in recovery, younger in life. My house right now, I have my youngest daughter has a number of life-threatening illnesses. And I got very depressed when she was diagnosed. Well, she almost died. I got actually very depressed when, I don't even know if depressed is the right word, when we walked in the hospital and they came in and said, Mrs. Henning, we think she will live. And she was 6 years old. It never dawned on me that children could die. I mean, I guess I knew that, but I didn't really ever think it because I had always been blessed with two children that had really good health. In fact, they were quite tenacious and were notorious in Narcotics Anonymous for many years because of their tenaciousness. She battles with that all the time. I walk with her all the time. It's not my battle, but I walk with her. And I am very proud to be able to walk with her. I hate being Misty. I really do. I hate being Misty. I always jag my boyfriend because he cries all the time. But like he gets grateful and starts crying. I go, oh my God. And now here I'm going to start. But anyway, this walk is the walk. I have learned more about Just for Today in the last 5 years than I learned at the beginning of my recovery. It seems like the longer I stay here, the more I have to look at what's right in front of me. Right after my daughter was diagnosed with, well, the first illness. I'm sorry, my son jags her off and goes, my sister, the one that lives in a bubble. But, you know, it seems like she just keeps getting all this stuff that happens. But, and we have a very sarcastic sense of humor in the house, so we make jest of all sorts of tragedies because that's how we handle tragedies. My father fell and was on the floor for 3 days They thought he was dead, but he actually was able to come back and be better, be alive. And after a period of time, my dad moved in with me, and they had given him 3 months to live. That was like 5 years ago. I was talking to someone that was like almost 5 years ago that he was given 3 months to live. My father is also someone that, you know, it's really nice because I used to have a very strained relationship with my father because of some of my childhood experiences. But I try to live my life that who I am isn't directed by who you are. That who I am is because these are choices that I make. And so I've been able to get to know him on a different level. And he is very heroic to me in many ways. I went to the World War II Liberty Bell thing with my daughter. My dad had served as a surrogate gunner. He served in that little ball that hangs under in World War II. And I know these women probably wanted to kill me because they said, well, thank your father for serving since he can't come, you know, since he's an invalid, he can't come. They said, he's truly a hero. And I said, my father's a hero for many reasons, not just because he was in World War II. I mean, I think the fact that he raised me was pretty heroic for real. But, he has an ability to make light. I was telling somebody, my dad is bedridden, basically. And he's legally blind. He can't hear at all. The whole neighborhood can hear the television, but he can't. And he won't get a hearing aid because, you know, he's not old. And we don't have medical alert because old people have medical alert. So we got a security system so he can hit the security system because he can be cool with a remote. Because, you know, you can be young and have a remote. He's only 82. You know, he'll be 83 in February. So he's not old by any means. And he said to me the other day, well, it's a good thing that my memory's going because they're starting to repeat the History Channel, and this way it'll all seem new to me. So that's my dad. How God impacts all of that is I'm on this journey with other people. It's their journey. It's their whatever. This is why I don't think I'm a spiritual speaker, because I wake up terrified every day of what I'm going to face in that day, because it could be anything. You know, I really wasn't obviously the person, good, the ambulance came, but that happens all the time in my life. That's nothing new for me. I think there was 4 months in a row somebody in my household was in the hospital every month. That's just typical. That's just the way we live because of what we deal with. I wake up afraid, and I need God to get up and walk. I'm the kind of person that although I thought I was really tough on, you know, when I used, I really wasn't tough. I was just like, I just had no regard. I really wasn't tough. I just didn't care. So, I mean, like, whatever you did to me, I was already doing to me, so it didn't matter. I mean, you could have shot me, big deal, who cares? Because I don't care about me. What does it matter? So it wasn't, like, tough. It was just, like, it was beyond low self-esteem. I mean, I used to make jokes. I wish I had low self-esteem when I came in here. I had to work for years to get up to low. I was so pitiful and pathetic. And so it's those kinds of things. I had no self-worth, no self-value, all of that. And I still don't think I'm all that I could be, and that's great. And why is that great? Because it still gives me a lot of things to work on. I don't ever want to think I'm the best mother I could be, the best daughter I could be, the best whatever I could be, because I'm not. Whatever it is, I can always be better. I can never be too loving. I can never be too tolerant. And I can never really write the check for this gift. Never really write the check. I was just a vampire, for real. And now I have this ability to have this life. I have a lot of things that I do that are, you know, dumb and da-da-da, and I lose my temper and, you know, all that humanness. If you want to see humanness, I'm your girl. I'm your girl. You'll find out about humanness right away. And it's only through God that I'm able to admit to you I've made a mistake. I'm able to come back and apologize. I'm able to try not to do it again. I'm even willing to do that stuff. Because when I came in, I knew that drugs were my only problem, and it was really a phase. And once I got through it, I was out of here. And you guys really had some major issues that you needed to work on, and I could see that clearly, but I wasn't one of those people. And part of that was I used all my life. I came in, I was 21 years old. I couldn't remember when I never used, so I didn't have this relative experience that some other members had where they go, well, I had addictive behaviors before I picked up, blah, blah, blah. I had never not picked up, so I didn't have any of that. I was just like, okay, that must be the problem. And it took me a while to stick around to find out that I had other little quirks in my personality that needed, you know, minor adjustments, that kind of thing. I really struggle sometimes with faith. I don't worry as much as I used to. I don't worry hardly at all anymore. Usually things are just what they are. And sometimes I have to remind myself to calm down because I still get get real psyched up. I get real electric. I start moving real fast. You can see when I'm in crisis mode because I'm just, you're like, whoa. And everybody thinks I have energy. No, I'm just panic. It's panic you're seeing. I'm just decisively panicking. That's what I'm doing. You know, calming down and breathing and all of that. And I'm one of those big believers that if you act out, if you do what you need to do, God will reward the effort. Doesn't really matter how you feel about it. Doesn't really matter if I'm like psyched to do the dishes. I can tell you whether I feel good or bad about them, unless I do them, they're not going to get done. And that's it. It doesn't really matter how I feel about going to the meeting. I know that if I go to the meeting, I'll stay clean, because that's what you told me. I know if I call my sponsor, I'll feel better. I know if I do this, I know if I share at the meeting, it'll feel better. I don't know how this all works. Don't know. Really, don't care. I'm still very self-absorbed. I want to feel good, so I do those things. I go to the meeting, I share, I talk about what I'm going through. And I believe that God will bring the answer. I really believe that we all have gifts, and together we can do anything. I just had an experience, and it was like the old stuff that I really like, the old school, because I'm old school. I like to not think I'm old school because that would like imply I'm old, but I guess I am. So I guess I have to come out of denial on some things too. But anyway, there was a guy who I got into a hospital because he was dying. His heart is at 40% capacity. And they couldn't send him anywhere because his heart was at 40% capacity and no one would take him. So he was going to have to go back to a really bad place. And I talked to some people, and people came together and chipped in to make his first, rent so that he could get up on his feet and he could be safe and not die. And that's what I know NA to be. That together we can do that. I couldn't have done that on my own. I was able to drive them to the hospital. That was my part. And I was able to say something to somebody else that this person needs help, and they knew that person, and then they started to help. And it's that kind of we thing that keeps me here, because like I said, I'm really an old hippie, even though, I'm just of that generation, that kind of karma, we are the world kind of thing. And sometimes I feel like, now, not everybody here is old enough to know this, but like when you were using the 60s and early 70s, it was like this we are the world thing, and then the 80s it got real cutthroat. And sometimes I get scared that our fellowship will become like that. Because I hear people, at least where I live in the city of Pittsburgh, I got mine, I'm going to go with mine. And I don't understand that. But that's not my thing, because like I said, I'm greedy. I want it all. And for me to stay clean and for me to be happy and for me to be okay, I have to continue to reach. I have to continue to do H&I. It's not because I'm a benevolent person. It's because I really want to be okay. I really want to be complete. And I am. I am. I can remember when I realized I was complete and I was like, wow, when did this happen? And then I realized that it happened because I went to meetings, I called my sponsor, I attempted to live the steps to the best of my ability, I flailed around, I made mistakes, I was a goofball, and somehow this all happened. There wasn't some mysterious thing that you all weren't telling me that got me there. Because I kept thinking, you guys, this couldn't be it. This, you go to your meetings, you call your sponsor, you work the steps. How is that possibly going to help me at any level? But it did and it does. I kept thinking if I hung out long enough, you'd tell me what the real deal was. Because I really didn't believe. 10 years later, I'm hanging out going, what's the real deal? I'm a little blonde. I really am a natural blonde, and it really shows the time. I can do physics just, I can do all this real stuff, and then I can't cross the street. I mean, I'm amazing that way. But all those things, and all those things about spirituality, the hungry, the angry, the lonely, the tired, and my killer is the too serious. I tend to laugh and joke a lot because when I get serious, it's heart attack time. I mean, I just get deadly serious and I have no tolerance, no compassion, whatever. I have learned to be more tolerant only because I have realized what stress does to people, how stress impacts people, and it's a conscious decision to try to be tolerant and calm and caring. It's because really stress kills people. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Now, I don't know how to get rid of it other than prayer. And so I turn my face to God. That's all I know to do. And I have to live by what I believe is correct. I have had things happen to me where I could not tell you why I did it other than my spirit was moved to do it. And I don't know how to explain that any other way than if you experience it, you'll know what I mean. Where all of a sudden, I am just driven to do something that has no rhyme, no reason, and comes out of nowhere. For me, that is how my spirituality works. I try to stay in tune with everything because it's just all—it's all connected. And I really believe that we all cross each other's paths for a rhyme and a reason. You know, I'm able to be with my daughter. I'm able to be with my father. I'm able to be here with you. There are people that have been very supportive for me during that time, and I hope at times I've been very supportive for others. But I think that this is where we should love and nurture each other, and I try to do that. I fall short. I'm sure somebody else falls short too. You know, because this is a spiritual battle we're in, a momently spiritual battle of which way are we going to go. If it's really about addiction, if it's really about how we act, really about how we think, this is a momently spiritual battle. I had a sponsor who told me I should momently pray. I've been working on that for 22 years. I have still not done it perfectly. But I constantly am striving to always be conscious with my God. And that's very difficult for me. Because I still, when I start to do well, I kick God to the curb real fast when I'm doing well. It's like I need crisis or something. I don't know what it is. I'm just like a goofball that way. But when I start to do stuff and start to pray, my life runs smooth, smooth as silk. I'm gonna give you like a little hint. This is something that took me a while to figure out. When my sponsor told me to do that, I have 5 years clean. And I couldn't figure it out. It took me 2 years to figure it out. And she was telling me to momently prayer. And what I do is I have a lot of, I don't know if anybody else does all this thinking. You can almost see my wheels starting when I start to go. In fact, when you see the wheels starting, I'm in addictive thought. Because my whole body language changes if I'm in recovery thought or addictive thought. It's like weird. It's like, but people who know me like go, aha, I see you. You know, I see you doing it. And so what I have to do is I have to change that, and all I do is I put, you know, what I call my God in front of it, and I turn it into prayer. Now, whatever that is, if that's even like the NA fellowship for people, whatever it is, just, you know, I change it in that way. And that works for me, that all of a sudden I go from this little self-driven machine, because I get like a kamikaze, to all of a sudden it's like I'm part of a bigger entity. And as long as I'm in that bigger entity mode, we're all safe from me. If I'm not, I mean, I'm capable, driven to burn the village, the whole village, because I take no prisoners. Everybody got to go. There's no witnesses left. I mean, I just have no sense. And then I just do like a little murder-suicide at the end. And I mean, I've had people even say to me, my God, Mayor, when you go on your missions, do you have to get so dangerous so fast? And I look at them and go, but I made a choice. I mean, why would I linger in a choice? I just, you know, go do it. If you're going to do it, do it. If you're not, don't. And so that's kind of how to be. So for me, I'm an all or nothing person. I try to stay in tune because the wreckage and all that other stuff, I'm frankly too old to deal with anymore. I'm old. I'm tired. I just don't have the energy and the speed. And I've also come to realize that when I do that stuff, I'm doing that because life is happening out here. Like, for real, when my daughter got diagnosed, I was amazed that I didn't act out. Because this was always my MO. Something bad happens, I act out over here. Why? Because then that tells me that I still have control in my life. And that's what I always did. And it wasn't until she got diagnosed here that I realized that that's why I did a lot of stuff, so then I could blame me for causing havoc, and it wasn't like something bad just happened to me. I felt like I had control. And once I like recognized that, I no longer do it. It's amazing. It's like, it was like something that just, I couldn't believe I did it. But it made me feel better to have that control than just have to let go and trust. And I believe that spirituality, love, Narcotics Anonymous, all that stuff is all the same. The only way you get it is to surrender to it. The only way you get it is to free fall in it. And that's not easy to do. you know, I continue to try to do it every day. Every day is different. You know, some days I'm just filled with fear, and some days I'm feeling okay about things, and that's the battle that I'm in. And when I'm filled with fear, I reach for something, whether it be the basic text, whether it be a CD of a speaker, whether it be a phone call to another person, I reach for something to connect me to God, because I truly believe God rewards effort. If He knows it's in the reaching, it's not even so much what I'm reaching for, but the fact that I'm reaching to God, that my prayers will be answered. Because I don't want to use. I don't want to miss moments. I miss too many. And I hope that your member is, our member is fine, and I hope everybody's fine. This is really, really a beautiful gift, and it's really nice to be okay. Even though I'm flawed, even though I'm a coward, I'm like the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz, like I'm afraid of my own tail kind of coward. I'm that big of a coward. You guys are still, you still love me. For real, I know you do, and that's like amazing. I have a boyfriend who last night said to me, "Don't change who you are," which I thought to myself, if I could have done that, I would have done that years ago, because it would have been so much easier. but I thought it was nice that he actually liked who I was, because some days I'm not so wild about me. I thought it was really great. It's nice to be embraced for who I am rather than tolerated for, or in spite of, or we'll make exceptions, or because I can remember when I was in active addiction, people would say, "Oh, she's just going to, probably go out in a blaze of rage." I mean, they really had told my parents that I was similar to someone with, kind of like Down syndrome. I would need to be taken care of for the rest of my life. I was unemployable. I had no skills. I had no talents, nothing. I was just like a nothing. And I still think that was a bit harsh, but but at any rate, I do have skills. I have a job. I have all that stuff. And in fact, I'm quite impressed with the things that are able to be done in a given day, as long as I just stick to just for today, just for the moment, and get through it. I have a lot of commitments, and so my electricity works out well that way when I get sped up, but it all works as it's supposed to. Even my mistakes work out as they're supposed to, because then it allows for something else to happen, more to be revealed as I go along. Thank you very much.